Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. Well, because you are all smart, well-informed, beautiful people, it will come as no surprise to you that the world has lost its damn mind. And the reason is that half the country, politically speaking, the Democrat Party, has lost its damn mind, and they have dragged the rest of us into their bizarro world nightmare. As you may know, I used to be a Democrat prior to, say, not quite a couple of decades ago, and I converted to conservatism for various reasons, partly because I woke up to the fact that the party I thought I belonged to as a classical liberal had become utterly, hatefully, rabidly, violently radical, detached from reality, and I had no idea then how much more so they would become in recent years. This far-left capture of the Democrat Party has brought America not just to the brink of civil war, but into an actively hot civil war for which there can be no peaceful resolution, no compromise agreement, no truce, no deal, because not only is there not a single issue on which left and right in this country have anything like common ground, but the left, quite frankly, will be satisfied with nothing less than the extermination of the right. The left wants conservatives dead, and if you think that sounds exaggerated, then you're simply not keeping up with the kind of gleefully murderous rhetoric, the terroristic activism, and the demonizing narratives that characterize the left today. Sorry, but I confess to having no optimism whatsoever that the left-right divide as it stands today can be bridged through dialogue, reaching across the aisle, or any of those old political cliches that politicians used to be fond of proclaiming. As my friend the late great Andrew Breitbart noted many years ago, this is war. The left certainly knows this, but I fear that too many on the right still cling to a sort of willful naivete about the America we now live in, an America that the left has fundamentally transformed for the worse. My guest today is a longtime friend who has also come to this conclusion, and so we're going to have a conversation about why and where things stand and what we have to do to win this war and make America great again. So stay tuned. You definitely do not want to miss this conversation, I guarantee it. And don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take, if you don't already, so you don't miss any of the compelling conversations we're having here. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at the intersection of politics and culture is a political pundit extraordinaire, a broadcaster and a writer. Her show, The Orange Report, covers California and Orange County politics. She's all over the media all the time. She's basically the go-to fill-in host for many big-name hosts. She's appeared on outlets like Fox News, News Nation, Newsmax, even the BBC. She's the author also of Drawing Lines, Why Conservatives Must Begin to Battle Fiercely in the Arena of Ideas. And she appeared here on The Right Take to talk about that book a couple of years ago. She lives in Southern California, where I moved from, and I'm honored to call her a longtime friend. Kira Davis, welcome back to the Right Take Podcast.
Hi, Mark. It is so good to be back. It's been a while. It's been some years now, but I was just talking to a friend about, I was writing something on our COVID experience, and I realized that it was 7 years ago now, and I couldn't believe it. It just seems like the last 6 years or so has been really condensed, so it doesn't feel like so many years since I talked to you.
Yes, time flies whether you're having fun or not, I guess. Well, I'd like to have just a free-ranging discussion with you today about whatever's going on these days that you think is important, whatever issues get you revved up and passionate about addressing. But I do want to start with something I noticed you posted on social media recently, in which you stated that it was time to ban Islam in America. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that, I was really taken aback because I thought, wow, Kira has been really radicalized. And that resonated with me because I have been too. I've begun saying the same thing openly, and I'm seeing others agreeing with that. And it feels like this is a watershed moment in the culture when Americans are now starting to talk very seriously about banning Islam in America, which is something that many might consider un-American because it goes against the grain of our freedom of religion. But does it feel that way to you too, that there's been a sea change of sorts in terms of Americans finally saying, we're drawing a red line? And also, how do you respond to that criticism of banning Islam being unconstitutional?
Yeah, well, if you ask me where I got radicalized, it was Charlie.
Charlie Kirk.
It was Charlie Kirk. It was losing Charlie. That changed a lot for me. I think until that moment, I was still under the impression or the hope that we might be able to, reason our way out of these really strange times with the change in the administration. Maybe the other side, the left, might come around a little bit. We could get back to some kind of unity. But when Charlie was killed, I realized, oh, we're actually at war. And I've been talking a lot about this for the last year. I've been telling people this is actually war. And we're not looking at it as war because it's not a kinetic war right now. Right now. But we are getting to the point where I feel like it's coming to that. And when you look at what's going on in Europe, that is it's such a warning shot, right? Like it's a big red sign for us Americans. But really, when I realized like we actually have no further to go on this Islam issue, Mark, was when I don't know if you saw my video where I was coming through Dallas, Texas, over Easter, actually. And I stopped. I have a habit of going to airport chapels if an airport has one available. And Dallas has 5. Which they used to have 0. They took them out for a while. So I was like, oh, wow, isn't this great? They have 5? That's so cool. I'm going to try to visit everyone today because I had like 6 hours. And I got to 2, and they were both basically just mini mosques. And I had a bit of a confrontation with some of the men who were coming in to pray. It was Easter Sunday, I think, or Palm Sunday. And so I was going in to pray on Palm Sunday. And but all of the Muslim men were bringing they weren't even bringing their prayer rugs. The prayer rugs are stacked to the ceiling in these places.
Wow.
And they were coming in and they were all perturbed that I was there and sitting there. And I ended up sitting there like for an hour and a half because I refused to leave while all the men were coming in to pray. And I made a video when I left that chapel and it went viral. And I realized, oh, Islam is a real problem. We're in takeover territory now. You obviously are familiar what's going on.
Yes, and I live right outside Dallas.
Right. So you see it. Like Texas is very close to being conquered, in my opinion, which is crazy. Yeah. But and we also saw the giant mosque that's going to go up in McKinney, despite the entire town being against it. They're going to, erect this mosque there. So
yeah, the city council voted unanimously. I think it was 7-0 to allow that mosque to go up.
Unanimously. So we're in big trouble. And Islam is not a friend. We've always recognized that it's not been a friend to the West. But as you said before, we have our religious freedom exceptions here. And Americans really struggle with that. Now, to answer the second part of your question, which is how do you address the criticism. This was also my hesitation with you can't ban a religion here. We have the right to practice your own religion. But here's what changed my mind, Mark. And I'm not telling anybody, I'm not a legal scholar. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I'm barely a scholar. I'm just a woman with a mic. But when President Trump took office in 2024 and immediately started hacking away at all the red tape, at all the bureaucracy, at the deep state, Elon came in with DOGE. We closed that border immediately, doing all the things that we were told we could never do. I realized, oh, we're just being tricked. We're America, and we can probably do about whatever we want. We just need to find the lawyers. We just need to find the will. We just need to find the political path. But there is a path to do whatever we want. We don't have to honor Islam as a religion in this country if it is a religion that's going to destroy this country. We don't have to. So we have some options that I know of. One is to declare it a political system, and then that's easier to ban in different places. The way that you would not let the Nazi party have an office in your town, or you would not, let the Nazi party have a lunchtime study in your school. We all recognize that the Nazi Party is bad, evil, and therefore we don't let it be a part of the regular American political system. We can do the same with Islam and avoid the religious exception, but also we don't have any, we're under no obligation to welcome Islam in America. We are under none.
Yeah, and I'm going to tie communism in with this also, because I think it's long overdue for Americans to treat Islam and communism not just as simply protected religious and political positions, but as literally existential threats to our way of life and also to the Constitution that these threats have exploited in order to flourish in the culture that they're actually designed to destroy. So I don't see why we're under any obligation to let the Constitution be a suicide pact. And also, these are threats I think that the Founding Fathers just did not envision. I mean, they understood Islam at the time was a threat, but it was a distant, foreign one.
Right.
And I think by freedom of religion, they never meant religious beliefs outside the Judeo-Christian tradition, especially religious beliefs that are inherently hostile to that tradition. So I think there is definitely a path. Now we just need the political will to make that happen.
Yeah, the political will is mixed up with the money, unfortunately. I think that's what happened in McKinney. I think that's what's happening in Texas right now. These Middle Eastern, heavily Muslim countries send their representatives over here, and they have just free-flowing cash. They have just so much money to throw around. And capitalism money, that's our weakness here in America.
Speaking of a sea change in attitudes, and this gets back to Charlie Kirk again, do you think that things changed like they did for you, for many other Americans? I mean, I didn't know Charlie well personally. I met him only on a couple of occasions. Did you know him well? And you already mentioned that opened your eyes, or at least opened them some more, to the nature of the conflict between left and right in this country. But do you think that had an impact on a lot of other Americans as well?
Yeah, I didn't know Charlie that well. We were acquainted, casual friends is what I would say. Like maybe we would see each other around the universe and say hi. And I always had a lot of criticism for Charlie. I didn't always like the way he talked about some of the issues out there. I never appreciated, this was my main issue with Charlie, is that he really gave us Candace Owens. And I never liked Candace. And you might remember that I've always been one of the people saying, this woman is dangerous. Do not welcome her into the conservative circle. And I lost a lot of work and a lot of jobs saying that in the beginning because conservatives loved Candace. Mm-hmm. And Charlie defended her at first, and then they went their separate ways. And we can see now why. And now people are starting to see what I saw. So I always had, we would always have this sort of jokey little, I know you're upset with me, Kira, you know, but calm down relationship. So I would just say acquaintances. I don't want to lend any more depth to our relationship than was there. But did I notice, do I think that Charlie's death affected the rest of America the same? Yes, absolutely. On the left and the right. So almost like a mirror image of each other. So not only did it radicalize a lot of people on the right, and I know if like as a mom to watch Charlie's life be taken for the simple act of debating and honoring free speech, I finally realized like, oh, if they would do that to Charlie, they would do that to my son, mm-hmm. you know? And on the other side, I realized that a lot of people were suddenly given permission or suddenly felt like they were given permission to hate. They were, and it was the same thing with the murder of the United Healthcare CEO, right?
Yes.
Which is like, it suddenly gave rise, not birth, but rise. And I think this was aided by Trump taking office in 2024. And we saw all the violence start to gin up with the Tesla kings and all of that stuff, ICE protests. I think Charlie's death gave a certain segment of our nation license to give air to all of the hatred and the resentment that they had been covering up with this facade of reason, tolerance, acceptance, love is love, no hate, hate has no home here. All of that was just a cover up what they really believed. And I just realized that when Charlie went and I was watching my own friends, like people who knew that I knew Charlie personally, own friends and own family saying he deserved to die, I realized that if somebody gave them a magic license to murder whoever they wanted in this country, you know, you got 1 hour purge and you can say anybody has to go, that they would put me on that list. I realized if someone would say no consequences, you can go about your life. I realized a lot of those people would put us on that list. And then I realized this is not a segment of our population that can be reasoned with. And that's when I changed.
Exactly right. And I want to get to the violent aspect in just a moment, but let me stick with Candace Owens. What about this proliferation of internet influencers? And I can't believe that internet influencer is even a thing. I always am embarrassed just to even say the words, but it is a huge thing. What about these influencers who, in the wake of Charlie's murder, exploited that for controversy and clicks and cash in a way that's sharply divided the right? What do we do about the impact of these kinds of subversive media figures?
I'm not sure if there's something to be, quote, done about the impact of them, but I think what we can recognize, and I saw this early, I accepted it early when I was so confused by the sudden rise of Candace. And then I realized, oh, I'm applying the same rules of my profession to Candace, and we're not the same. I'm an opinion journalist and a conservative opinion journalist. That means people pay me to tell them what I think about political stories and pop culture. And she's an influencer, and that's a different space. And I think conservatives, because especially people like you and I, Mark, we're old. We came in on the movement in the Breitbart days. We're the OGs, right? We saw this new media movement build from absolutely nothing except Rush Limbaugh on radio to what it is today. And we are still in an activist mindset. We think that everyone around us who is making money and doing well on this side of the fence is like us, that they care very much for the politics, for the activism, for everybody getting in and doing their part. And that's not true. What conservatives have not accepted is that we are now the new media, and media is entertainment. So Candace is an entertainer. You know, Tim Pool's an entertainer. Tucker is an entertainer. All of these people are entertainers, and the entertainers respond directly to what the audience responds to. And the thing about modern podcasting and modern broadcasting is that you can have some platforms where people can just donate to you as you're talking. Go and watch Candace one day. She's on a platform. I'm not going to elevate that platform, but she's on a platform where people can click a button and send her money as she's talking, and she can see those dollar signs come up. So in real time, she's getting feedback about what ideas or what statements are creating buzz and earning her money. So it's this feedback loop that's going on in the, quote, right-wing influencer circles. They aren't influencers. They're entertainers. It's easier to accept what they're doing when you realize that. And I don't know that there's anything you can do to diminish that reach the same way that you can't diminish really Hollywood's reach, except by continuing to create your own good content.
Good point. Well, let me get to the violence again, the notion of civil war, because I've been saying for a while now that we're already in a hot civil war. It's not even a cold civil war anymore. It's just that only one side is waging the hot part, the violent part. Mm-hmm. And the other side, our side, is largely willfully ignorant or naive about it. You know, if you look at Europe, they have reached a point now where I think they're beyond political solutions in Europe. And I think civil war is inevitable in places like Britain and France.
Yeah.
Are we rapidly reaching a point here where political solutions aren't going to be enough here as well? And that the violence and civil war is going to get more intensified and more literal? In other words, are things going to get worse before they get better, if they ever do?
Yes, I believe so.
Me too.
I do. I do believe we are on the precipice of a kinetic civil war where the right starts firing back. You're absolutely right. The left has already started with the violence, right? And we just keep thinking, well, the law will take care of this. We've got an administration that gets it and they're working hard. But we are also a nation of states that can do, you know, pretty much what they want. And we've seen that, you know, I'm here in California, and that's where you moved from. And you see what they do to us here. I have been asking the question in California. We are basically at almost to the point where voting doesn't matter here. It is completely taken over by the communist left, and it's completely corrupted. And even when you make something too big to rig, like the Spencer Pratt election in LA, you still can't manage to beat that machine. And I keep, and then when we vote for things that they don't want us to vote for, like the death penalty, which we've done three times here, and the governor has essentially just refused to fund it and vetoed it. Or, you know, we vote for correcting our crime bill mess, then they don't fund it. Even when we manage to get ourselves together enough to vote for these things we really want, they're rendered null and invalid at the state level. At what point can you no longer consider yourself an American state? Or can you be an American state and be a communist-run state? At what point are we no longer really a part of the union? And you look at what's going on with Mamdani, and he is really kind of setting up his own type of fiefdom in New York City, making comments on international politics, saying he's going to arrest Netanyahu. We laugh about it, but really it's the establishment of a separate state, that it started all the way back, Mark, when we were first arguing about the border in Obama land, and we started setting up sanctuary states and sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
These are divisions. These are tools of civil war, to my mind. And when you look at a place like McKinney, and the people have expressed their will, they have said expressly they don't want this. They know it's bad. There's nobody on board for it but the city council and the Muslims in the town, and they still pass it. What option do the residents have? Do you, as Americans, are we just to say, we just shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's the law. The law is the law. And now the law is actually going to murder me, or it's going to push me right out of my home. But hey, that's the law. Or do we take up arms and defend our families? I think we're getting to that point. I genuinely, genuinely do, because I don't know how you solve this problem without physically removing some of these people from our towns and our cities.
One of the things about our side that bothers me is I hear this a lot, this kind of complacent attitude that, hey, we're not worried because we've got all the guns. Our side's got all the guns. But that is completely pointless or irrelevant if you don't have the will to use those guns. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we do. or I think very few of us do. So I think that's an attitude on our side that we've got to get a better grip on. Speaking of California, because you anticipated this question a moment ago, as we've already mentioned, I left California a little less than 3 years ago. I had to get my family out to a place that was more affordable and safer, among other things. But you stayed there. You're fighting the good fight, and more power to you. You've already expressed your concern and frustration about the election or lack of election integrity there. What does the future of California look like to you? Do you think that in the long or medium or short run, do you think the Democrat dominance there can ever be reversed?
I do. But once again, I think that we're really standing on a precipice here. We've got a gubernatorial election. Well, it's a statewide election coming up in November. You may have heard about Steve Hilton running here. He's doing well. He's running a great campaign. But even still, Javier Becerra, who is Biden's former HHS secretary, is hardly running at all. And he's still in the polling, and you can take this with a grain of salt, but in the polling, he's still beating Steve by 20-25%. Steve's got time to close that gap, and we don't really trust the polls here in California anyway. So he does have time to close that gap, but I think Donald Trump nailed it. I don't know if anyone was paying attention when the Spencer Pratt thing went down, but Steve was also sinking in those late returns. He, in any other state, both Spencer and Steve the race would have been called for them night one, but not in California, because we know there are mysterious ballots to come in. So Spencer lost that incredible ballot drop. That was just, he just sunk to the bottom. It was just infuriating. It was so obvious, but a lot of people didn't understand that Steve was too. Every ballot drop that was coming in was dropping him closer and closer to third place. And all of the new ballots coming in were for Tom Steyer, not for Becerra, because they called it for Becerra the first night. but for Tom Steyer. And so when the Spencer Pratt thing went down and everyone was so upset, suddenly the returns froze and they declared it for Steve. And Trump said, I think the only reason Steve Hilton poked through is because they knew it would have been a bridge too far to pull the old rope-a-dope on both of these candidates at the same time, because the world was watching at that point. So I don't know if we're going to get away with this in November. We've got some other offices that are going to be really important flips, too, if we can do it. Attorney General is a big one. Michael Gates there. He's looking good to win that. State Superintendent of Curriculum, Sonia Shah, she's looking good to win that. She's looking so good to win it that the governor has actually proposed a bill, and he's going to sign it, to strip that position of all its authority. Are things going to change here? Yeah. If Steve doesn't win in November, they're going to get worse before they get better. But here's my prediction, Mark, for the state of California. I think we've got big revival on the horizon. And I've been saying this, that we're not going to push out Islam and we're not going to push out these nefarious elements from American society with the law alone, even with brute force alone. We need the brute force of the gospel, because when the Holy Spirit moves in, then there's not enough room for the enemy to be housed, right? For the enemy to live.
Yes.
So I think America has turned away from God in a lot of ways, and the state of California most certainly has. But I have seen signs of revival in this state and across the country, but in this state. And I think we are going to experience a revival that will motivate justice and motivate our voters. I just don't know when that will be. And I don't know how far we have to fall to the bottom before we hit it.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. As
yes,
they say
amen.
That. It's maddening, especially having come from California, and I can vouch for this. That's a state that should be utopia. But instead, Democrat policies have made it a dystopia. And it's heartbreaking to witness.
We've abandoned God here, Mark. We've abandoned God.
Yes.
And that was a big part of the COVID restrictions. And, you know, I left my previous church because they closed during COVID. And, you know, the pastor was like, look, this is really tough and we don't want to lose our taxism status. And, you know, we're not quite sure what all the health outcomes are here. You know, everyone was nervous. I get that. But I sent a letter to the pastor and I said, at what point do we let God be God? You know, at what point do we say our God is bigger than this virus? He's bigger than the government. He's bigger than the governor. At what point do we say we have a responsibility and accountability to the kingdom, not man? And he's, you know, the response from the leadership of the church, I did get a response, which was thank you for your concern. You know, we're getting a lot of opinions from different corners and we just have to keep the safety of our flock in mind. And I realized these people are not serious about the gospel, because if you look at those who spread the gospel, the initial apostles, the conditions which they did that in, nothing in comparison to some COVID shutdowns, you know. So I didn't find it to be a good excuse, but I also found it to be an infection across California churches. So we have kicked out God out of school, out of the public square. There are only a few communities in California that we consider Christian communities these days. So we have turned our backs on God. We have legal abortion up to the moment of birth. We have a huge sex trafficking industry here. We have sexual degradation. San Francisco, you know, that's all I need to say, San Francisco. We've turned from God. And that's why, the Democrat policies are ruining this place. But the Democrat policies get to ruin this place because we have turned away from the gospel.
You know, Solzhenitsyn said that all of the terrible things that had happened in his country since the Russian Revolution were because man had forgotten God.
Yeah.
And you can see that happening, maybe not quite to the same extent, but you can see it happening here as well. I saw something else on your social media feed that I would like to allow you to vent about, child surrogacy. Would you like to say something about that?
Yeah, you know, this is not an issue that has really been at the top of my mind for over the last decade or so. I mean, I'm usually just talking about what's going on in government and the political sphere, but this has popped up, you know, as other great broadcasters out there, great influencers, I'll use that term, like Ali Beth Stuckey and other people like her who have been talking, Katie Faust, who I love.
Katie Faust. Yeah, she's me too. I had her on this show, actually.
Oh, she's going to be on my show at the end of the month, too. Yeah.
Oh, she is fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. Doing the Lord's work. But I didn't realize until I started listening to women like that, that, oh, surrogacy is an issue. So here's what happened. Here's how I got here. It goes back to 2024. It goes back to Trump coming in and saying there's a deep state. And Elon, really, too. Say all the stuff he found out with Doge. And I know he was disappointed he didn't get the whole job done, but that's how it goes. But he did rip the veil off a lot of the nefarious things we're doing with our money, they're doing with our money. And I realized, Mark, all of this is connected. It's all connected. Separating us from God, separating us from our own money, separating us from our own health care, right, during COVID. So and it's been a decades-long process. We have grown very comfortable with offloading our personal health care to a third party. So we don't even know how our own bodies work anymore. That's been purposeful. Mm-hmm. The vaccine schedules, the questionable food sources, the open borders, the COVID restrictions, easy divorce, separating children from parents in public schools, whether it's the trans agenda or anything else, separating parents from their ability to discipline their own children. All of this, closing churches during COVID, all of it was related. Mm-hmm. And when I look at surrogacy, I realize that's just another tool in the bag of the Marxist slash Islamist agenda, which is Absolutely. To even separate us from the process of creation, of creating our own families. So suddenly children become a product. And Katie Faust lays out the case excellently yes. about how that happens and how it started with gay marriage, which I shrugged my shoulders at in the beginning and said, well, I didn't want it, but it is what it is. God's marriage still stands. But now I realize it was an insidious, slippery slope to bring us to where we are now, where we have baby factories, where we have women. They are the Handmaid's Tale. The left in their yes. surrogacy cases have become the Handmaid's Tale that they keep saying the right is hiring wombs. So surrogacy is not just a scourge for the family and an evil for a child. It is also a national security issue.
Okay, I'm going to jump to another topic.
Okay.
Men in women's sports.
Okay.
Go.
Well, we've seen a couple of NBA players step up in the last week or two
yes.
to say that they have finally realized their true identity as women.
This is and hilarious.
They want to go into well, now the left, the women on the left, I've been trolling X today, and there's a lot of left-wing WNBA supporters and that are saying, oh, well, okay, fine. If you're going to do it, then take the full transition. You know, I'll pay for your hormone treatment. I'll pay for your, oh, no. Those aren't the rules you gave us. You can't change the rules now. The rules you gave us are that some women have penises. And if a man says he identifies as a woman, that's the only proof you need. Mm-hmm. Case in point here in California, that's the only proof you need. Mark, in 2013, I was one of about a half a dozen parents in this state who were running up and down the state, appearing on news shows, appearing on Fox News and radio programs, warning people of this transgender curriculum that just got passed and was getting pushed into our schools. And no one believed it because it seemed crazy. It seemed mm-hmm. so unbelievable. We got no traction and, you know, it faded away. And it took about 10 years to rear its ugly head finally, but it finally worked its way up into the classroom. And back then we were saying, look, the new bathroom laws are going to hit. And they do this. They're insidious about it, Mark. They pass the bill and then they wait years to institute it. So we've forgotten. And so the bathroom bill is going to hit us in about 7 or 8 years. And this bathroom bill says that any boy can walk into a girl's bathroom and he doesn't need a medical, you know, excuse or anything. And everybody said, that's crazy, Kira. All my liberal friends, that's crazy, Kira. Well, no, that's actually the law. I know it for myself because I had children in public school. That's actually the law. And my daughter, when she was in high school, often avoided the bathroom during the days because there were boys in there. Not all of them were trans. Most of them weren't. Not trans boys, like being weird. Most of them were just regular boys taking advantage of this law. So men and women's sports, not only is it absurd, it's absurdly evil. And that is on purpose too. This is an inversion of God's creation. And it holds the same place in my mind as Islam, which is this is evil and it must be driven out from our society. It's a direct attack on women, girls, and the process of creation.
For the longest time, for maybe half a century, feminism was the tip of the spear of the cultural Marxist assault on the family and on civilization. But now the next stage of it is the transgender agenda, because that throws even women under the bus. It's just the absolute farthest you can go in terms of destroying the definitions of male and female, eradicating masculinity and femininity. And that was the Marxist goal, is the abolition of the family, and that's how you accomplish it. Okay, yeah. Let me jump to something else here. You also have a politics-free podcast in which you and our mutual friend Amelia Hamilton, whom I've also had on this show, talk about Hallmark movies. Yeah. What is that all about?
Yes, it is. The name of our show is called Journey to Christmas Land, and Amelia and I love Hallmark movies. We love any cheesy TV Christmas movie. We really cover the spread. So you got Great American Family, Lifetime, Netflix, Hallmark. But Hallmark really is the Hallmark of the Christmas movie season. And so we decided, and we started doing this casually back in 2020 through COVID. We were like, well, we need a little break from the craziness. Let's talk about these cheesy movies and the tropes and what makes them cheesy and what makes them addictive. And we love these movies. We call the universe of Hallmark and these cheesy Christmas movies Christmas Land. So it encompasses any cheesy Christmas TV universe. And there's rules to the universe, right? There's rules to Christmas Land. Not like in our real life or like here in California, where you vote for a rule and then the governor changes the rule anyway. In Christmas Land, there are hard and fast rules that we love and make us feel good. For instance, everyone always gets what they want. You know, it's nice to see something where you know for sure everyone's getting a happy ending. Everyone's getting what they want. There's no hatred in Christmas Land. Even there's no real anger. Even a conflict will be resolved by the end. And it's never really that bad. Even the conflicts are made in love. There's always a black best friend. I love that. Hallmark has trouble getting diversity into their movies, but they always put it in the form of a black best friend. Like, get this person there. So you know you're always going to have a wonderful friend who's got no other agenda than to make sure you meet the love of your life. You know, and so it's something you can count on. It's something that never leaves you with a dark feeling. It's always warm. You're not going to be surprised by anything. Hallmark's been taking a few liberties lately. They've got a few gay couples on there, which is why we expanded our Christmas fair. We moved over to Great American Family. We do a lot. The rule is that family is most important. Everyone gets what they want. Love wins in the end. And Christmas is the most magical time of the year. And even when we do movies that aren't set at Christmas time, so sometimes we'll do a bonus episode that's like a fall episode or something. But even those movies are in Christmas Land. It's just a different season in Christmas Land. And these days, Mark, you know, you're a dad of 150 kids. And you know, you sit down to watch something with the kids and there can just be all kinds of weird surprises in there. And you're never going to get a weird surprise in these movies. It's only love and kindness and Christmas.
Well, I think it's great that you do that show, and I wanted to bring it up.
Thank
because
you.
While some people might think, well, this is sort of a frivolous pursuit or a frivolous thing, especially in light of all of the serious topics that we've just talked about, it's important for people to be able to set politics aside temporarily and enjoy something for its own sake, because politics, believe it or not, isn't everything. And I think that's a key difference between conservatives and progressives, is that for the left, everything, and I mean everything, is political. And that's part of the problem with our culture today. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because that's on purpose, too. I talk a lot about all of these things that are connected. That's on purpose, too, right? Where our media and our entertainment suddenly went from, you know, just fun stuff like the Brady Bunch to everything is political. Everything is political because everything is political. Everything is political because Hollywood, you don't even have a space to go anymore that isn't infected with some political message, except the Christmas Land universe. And so, yeah, when I say we don't bring any politics, we don't bring any politics into it. We don't even use sarcasm a lot. We don't talk about any negativity, and that's on purpose. But I want to say something, Mark, an observation that I made on the podcast with Amelia recently, and tell me what you think of this. So I've been rereading the Old Testament lately, and I was reading about, you know, how God tells Adam and Eve, don't eat from this tree. This is the tree of knowledge. It's going to give you knowledge that you shouldn't have. That's very controversial to people. But I was reading some commentary on it. And one of the things that God says to us is we're to come to him like the little children. And perhaps that Adam and Eve were more childlike, not childish, but childlike in their original state, meaning you don't want your child to be corrupted at 7 by seeing pornography, right? That puts them into a different adult world, knowing things they shouldn't know at that age. It opens the door to a lot of other evil stuff. Same with Adam and Eve in the garden. And so when our eyes were opened to the other horrors of the universe that we were never meant to see, it corrupted us too. We are meant to be innocent, childlike. And when I watch Hallmark movies, or when I watch the Christmasland movies, that's what I think our entertainment actually is supposed to be. And I'm not saying I enjoy that ever. Like, I do love my Christopher Nolan movies and all of that. But I'm saying, I think this is really the true story of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden, which is we are really supposed to, this stuff that we say is cheesy and silly, that's actually who we're supposed to be. That sweet innocence, that is not ignorance and it's not childishness. It's childlikeness, right? It's an innocence that humanity was always supposed to have, where we do look at each other through these rose-colored glasses, and we look at our families through these love-colored glasses. So in a way, I think the cheesy Hallmark Christmas universe, as silly as you might think, sitting down to watch it, in a way, I do think it's a reflection of who we're supposed to be.
That's part of the point about the tree of knowledge. It's actually, specifically, it's the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Right.
And I think a lot of people confuse that. I think, God didn't want us to, know certain things. But it's the point about good and evil. It's this loss of innocence that you mentioned, and it's an awareness of sin. That's what God was protecting us from. So, yeah, I think that's an excellent point that you made. Kira, where can people hear you and see you and keep up with you on social media?
Well, two places that are the best for you to go is X. You can follow me at Kira Davis, K-I-R-A, Kira Davis over there on X. Or if you want to know what I'm writing, or you even want to know how to find my other podcasts, like my Journey to Christmasland podcast, best place to go is justkiradavis.com, J-O-S-T, kiradavis.com, just Kira Davis. And I cross-post my stuff from Journey to Christmasland, but if you look us up anywhere, you'll find us. Look us up on Substack. We're doing a lot of bonus content this summer, and we'll be back with a fresh season in October. And that's where I'm talking all the time on X, so that's a great place to start. And if you don't like X and you're on Instagram, follow me there as well. I do a little over there, not as much as X, but and that is, again, just like my website, just Kira Davis, J-U-S-T, Kira Davis. And go buy my book, Drawing Lines, yes. Why Conservatives Must Be in a Battle Fiercely in the Arena of Ideas. I wrote it in 2022, Mark, and I will tell you what, it has never been more relevant.
I completely agree, because I read that book, and I encourage people to check it out. All good to know. Kira Davis, thanks for coming back to The Right Take. Keep fighting the good fight.
You too. And hopefully we'll make California a place where you'll at least want to come and visit for extended periods of time with your lovely family at some point.
I look forward to that. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.